Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hotter than expected inflation in March could upend the Fed's plan to cut rates.
There's not just a rethink now around June versus July, but you're beginning to see a rethink about, well, maybe it's not going to be three rate cuts this year. Maybe it's only going to be one or two, and maybe it doesn't happen until the end of the year.
And audit firm KPMG is hit with a record fine. Plus, a Wall Street Journal scoop. Several directors at Paramount will be stepping down amid merger talks. It's Wednesday, April 10th. I'm Amory Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that move the world today. For the past few months, we've been talking about just when the Federal Reserve will start cutting interest rates. Today, we got some news that's quite likely to push the central bank's timeline further down the road. Inflation came in hot last month. The Labor Department says the Consumer Price Index, which measures goods and services across the economy, rose 3.5% from a year earlier. That was higher than economists anticipated, and it marked a pickup from February. All three major U.S. stock indexes ended the day down, with the Dow falling more than 400 points. Joining me now to discuss is Wall Street Journal chief economics correspondent Nick Timiraos. All right, so Nick, what were the major drivers of higher costs last month?
Well, the Fed looks at inflation across three categories: goods inflation, housing inflation, and then services excluding housing. And the numbers so far this year have not shown much improvement across any of those categories. And so that's a concern, because if it's inflation's firmer because of this item or that item, it's easier to maybe come up with a story as to why you don't have to worry too much. But when it's more broad-based, then that begins to make you wonder what's going on with the inflation process here. The reason there has been such a reaction to this report is that January and February were firmer than anticipated, but there is a well-documented pattern of seasonal increases. At the beginning of the year, you could see a new year, a new price effect. Menu prices change at the beginning of the year. Insurance rates go up at the beginning of the year, but then it cools down after that. And that was really where the Fed was coming into this report. They didn't overreact to the January-February numbers because they said, well, we think this could be seasonality. But that meant you were going to put a lot of weight on what happened in March to either validate or disprove that story. And what we got in this latest report does not at all help with that story. And so now you have to begin to wonder if there's something else going on here.
Now, Nick, for the past couple of months, we've been kind of honing in on an expectation that we might see this first rate cut this year in June. Is that now off the table? What does this mean for the timeline?
It would be harder now. Whatever odds you thought you had on a June rate cut had to go down with this report, in part because you've now had 3 months in a row of less confidence, and the Fed has been saying they want to have more confidence. So not only do you need April to go in the better direction, you need May to go into the better direction, you need June to go in a better direction. Well, you're not going to have those numbers by June, right? You'll get the May number on the morning of the second day of the June meeting. So they're running out of time here to get the sort of conviction that they would need to cut in June. And the other thing you see happening now is people are saying, well, would you really have the conviction you need by July? Maybe not. And so now you're getting into September. What's happening this fall? There's an election. And so then there are questions around, well, do you really cut before the election if it's sort of a 50-50 case? So there's not just a rethink now around June versus July, but you're beginning to see a rethink about, well, maybe it's not going to be three rate cuts this year. Maybe it's only going to be one or two. And maybe it doesn't happen until the end of the year.
Is there any chance the Fed might not cut rates at all this year? Are we at that point potentially?
That's obviously a risk. If the economy just turns out to be much stronger than anybody anticipated this year and inflation progress stalls out, the Fed has a 2% target. Let's say inflation is running closer to 3% than to 2%. It's possible you only get one cut this year. It's possible that they look at everything and they decide there's just no need to risk another wave of inflation by easing things prematurely. So the data really is going to be in the driver's seat.
And finally, I wanted to pick up on that point you made a bit earlier about the upcoming election. What are the political implications possibly for President Biden as he seeks to champion Bidenomics?
Well, there's two ways to look at this. One is the economy is doing great. Job growth is strong. Activity is healthy. And so usually the Fed cuts because something bad is happening in the economy. If the Fed isn't cutting this year, maybe things are going well. And so that's the glass half full side of things. The president has been hoping the Fed would lower interest rates because with interest rates where they are, mortgage rates are high. The cost of money is expensive. If you need to borrow to buy a car or a house, you're paying for it. And that's not something that you would want if you were running for re-election. So to the extent that this report pushes interest rate cuts later into the calendar or calls into question whether you'll get them at all, that's definitely the glass half empty view. And so that's why most analysts are looking at this and saying this isn't what Biden would have wanted to see.
That's Wall Street Journal chief economics correspondent Nick Timrose. Nick, thank you as always.
Thank you, Anne-Marie.
Coming up, a Russian billionaire wins a challenge to EU sanctions, and a controversial U.S. spying law gets derailed. Those stories and more after the break.
This message is brought to you by Nuveen. Nuveen has provided investment excellence for 125 years. A lot has changed, but one thing that remains constant, including the different types of durable income and portfolios, can help investors meet their goals. With expertise across income and alternatives, Nuveen continues to expand its capabilities while maintaining its legacy as a leading investment manager. Visit Nuveen.com to learn more. Investing involves risk. Loss of principal is possible.
In Washington, GOP holdouts, egged on by former President Donald Trump, have derailed passage of a critical but controversial national security spying law. The failure of a procedural vote related to renewing the law, known as Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA for short, throws the fate of the act's surveillance power into uncertainty a week before it's due to expire. Both Democratic and Republican administrations have said Section 702 is vital to protecting Americans from foreign threats. But critics on both sides of the aisle have said it allows for the warrantless collection of some American communications. Early this morning, Trump posted on his Truth Social network encouraging lawmakers to, quote, kill FISA, saying it was illegally used to spy on him. There's no evidence that Section 702 has been used to spy on Trump or any of his campaigns. A different section of the law that isn't due to lapse was used to obtain wiretaps on a staffer for Trump's 2016 campaign. A Justice Department inspector general later sharply criticized the move. Alan Weisselberg, the former finance chief of Trump's family business, has been sentenced to 5 months in jail for lying during a civil fraud investigation into the former president. Weisselberg pleaded guilty to two counts of perjury last month. This will be his second stint in jail. He previously served 3 months of a 5-month sentence after pleading guilty to 15 felonies, admitting he received perks, including an apartment and leased cars, as part of a tax fraud scheme at the Trump Organization. A Russian businessman, Mikhail Fridman, has won a legal challenge over the European Union's decision to sanction him. The EU's General Court ruled that the bloc had provided insufficient evidence to show that Fridman and his business partner gave material support to the Kremlin, or that they supported actions undermining Ukraine's sovereignty. The journal's Lawrence Norman says it's the highest-profile defeat so far for the EU's campaign of sanctions against Russia in response to its war in Ukraine.
Critics would say that while the original intention was to push powerful, wealthy businessmen to oppose Putin, to oppose the war, all that it's done is to play into Russia's hands, driving some of those individuals out of the West to Russia and failing to compel them to speak up against the war. Now, it is still the case that Fridman faces some sanctions in the EU, in the UK and the US, so it's not the end of the story, but it has undoubtedly been a disappointment for Western policymakers.
The ruling could set a precedent for other challenges by Russian oligarchs who have been hit with sanctions for being part of the Kremlin's elite. KPMG's Netherlands unit agreed to pay a record $25 million in an exam cheating scandal. The Public Company Accounting Oversight Board said the firm's consultants had failed to take adequate steps to identify and investigate misconduct around the firm's mandatory training courses and misinformed investigators. The board said the answer sharing took place between 2017 and 2022 and involves hundreds of professionals, including partners and senior leaders. The fine is the largest monetary penalty that the board's imposed on an auditing firm. The board said KPMG neither admitted to nor denied its claims. And we report exclusively that four directors at Paramount are expected to step down from the company's board as it discusses a merger with Skydance Media. That's according to people familiar with the situation. Three of the directors were on an independent special committee looking into the best deal for the company, whether that's with Skydance or another suitor. Some of the sources said at least one of the directors who's leaving the board expressed concerns about the potential Skydance deal. And finally, nerd chic is in. But instead of throwing on a pair of chunky framed glasses, the trendiest among us are now sporting so-called fashion braces. Videos of TikTokers rocking braces have garnered millions of views. And musicians like Coi Leray and Steve Lacy have turned having a mouthful of metal from a fashion taboo to a power move. Culture writer Cassidy George says obsession with the cool nerd look is part of a generational shift.
Among Gen Z, there's been a movement towards embracing and celebrating imperfections. We've seen this with the popularity of conspicuous pimple patches, for example. So instead of hiding these things, we're sort of pronouncing them and celebrating them. And I think fake braces, or braces in general, which we associate often with pubescent shame or something that needs to be corrected, are instead becoming something that can be celebrated or a mark of difference or quirkiness that are exciting to people now, particularly younger people, I'd say.
You'll never see me choosing braces for fun. Been there, done that in high school, don't want to go back. And there might be good reason to only don these fashion braces at your own risk. Some vendors warn that customers will need to visit the dentist if they want to safely remove them. That is, if they don't fall off on their own with natural wear and tear. Before we go, we have a correction. KPMG's Netherlands unit agreed to pay a $25 million fine by the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board over claims of exam cheating and misinforming investors. An earlier version of this podcast incorrectly said that it was KPMG without specifying which unit of the company received the fine. And that's what's news for this Wednesday afternoon. Today's show was produced by Anthony Bansi with deputy editor Chris Sinsley. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back with a new show tomorrow morning. Thanks for listening.